Good evening. Welcome to the Spring 2015 Green Living Seminar Series at the Massachusetts College of Liberal Arts. Each spring semester, we invite a series of experts to campus to present on various aspects of sustainability. This semester, our topic is issues in climate change. Over the course of the semester, we have had experts speak on various issues of climate change, including policy, energy, nature conservation, science, and advocacy. Tonight's speaker is John Meyercheck, president of the Center for Ecotechnology. Mr. Meyercheck has the overall responsibility for leading the organization, including strategic planning, program development, program and operations management, fundraising, and communication. Mr. Meyercheck is a graduate of Cornell University. Before coming to the Center for Ecotechnology 24 years ago, Mr. Meyercheck worked in quality assurance and technical service in the biotechnology industry. He worked as a national park ranger in Wyoming and Hawaii, and canvassed for an environmental organization in New Jersey. At the Center for Ecotechnology, Mr. Meyercheck has served in a variety of positions, and he brings a positive vision, strong background in environmental science, broad experience, and a highly successful track record to the president position. Eco-building bargains in Springfield came to fruition through his vision and leadership, and the organization recently completed a $3.5 million expansion that included a deep energy retrofit of an older commercial building. Mr. Meyercheck's work in organic waste composting has garnered national recognition as a model for building a market-based system for diverting commercial food waste from disposal. Project work includes green job training for weatherization workers, and public education on energy efficiency, radon, and recycling. Tonight, Mr. Meyercheck's presentation will last around 30 to 40 minutes, and afterwards we will have time for questions and answers following his lecture. And his lecture tonight is entitled Addressing Climate Change, What an Individual Person or Business Can Do Right Now. Help me welcome Mr. Meyercheck.
Well, thank you very much, Dan, for that nice introduction. Although I always think it's funny when people say that because I wrote it, so it's kind of a... but thank you, thank you seriously for having me here, and thanks all of you for being here, especially on this beautiful afternoon, which I hope there's many more, I guess we're all hoping there's many more of these to come. So I do want to talk for a minute or two about CET and the work that we do and why we do it the way we do it, as I think a nice introduction or backdrop to going through a list of things that the average person, any of us, can do in our homes or our businesses to help reduce our carbon footprint. And then talk a little bit about what's going on in the business world and which is some exciting stuff and some opportunities there. And all of this part will be very practical, with references to places that you can get more information to take an action. And I don't know if this PowerPoint is available someplace, or if not, if you ask for my card or leave me your card, I can give it to you. And you'll be able to click on the links and go to any of the things that you see in here. And then lastly, we'll talk a little bit about carbon pricing, which is a growing topic here in Massachusetts. And I think it's an interesting one that I hope many of you will support, and so I want to do some just updating people a little bit on where that's headed. And then we'll have lots of time for discussion afterwards. So the Center for Ecotechnology, we basically help people and businesses save energy and reduce waste. We're a nonprofit organization. We've been around since 1976. We were founded right here in the Berkshires in Pittsfield, where we still have an office on Elm Street across from Samuel's. If you've never had lunch at Samuel's or breakfast, I recommend it. You can come and see us afterwards or before. We also have an office in Northampton, and we have our eco-building bargains used building materials store in Springfield. So the work that we do is really designed to do a number of different things. In the smallest sense of it, we're trying to help someone insulate and weatherize their attic for a bunch of reasons which we'll go into. But in the bigger picture, we're really working and have been and will be working for decades, I hope, to help transform the way that the world works, at least in the part of the world that we can affect. And we really look at, you've probably heard of the triple bottom line in your class or out in the world, and we really do look at things that we can do that help the community, economy, and environment. And there's, you know, when we were talking about that decades ago, it was often thought to be a strange notion that you could do something for the environment that would also be good for the economy, and the community wasn't part of the conversation often. And so our thinking has changed a lot, and it's great to be able to do work in the way that the world is thinking about environmentalism right now. So when we're helping people, even though this is a lecture about climate change, we don't actually talk about climate change to about probably 90 or 95% of the people we help. So unlike you here, who really care about climate change and would come to a lecture about it, most people don't really care about climate change, even if they accept the science and they think it's important. It's really just not a priority for them. And so a lot of our work is finding what is a priority for someone and how can we get them to take some action that benefits the climate because of the fact that we're also helping them get something that they need. So one big thing is saving money. There's a picture of one of our energy advisors talking to a homeowner about how saving energy in their home will reduce their utility costs. We also talk a lot about comfort because one of the biggest benefits of a green building or investing in energy efficiency is that you're more comfortable. So on that cold winter day, you can sit in your house and you don't have to have a hat on and you're still not spending lots of money on energy. And in some cases, if our homes aren't performing well, we can turn, I used to live in an old farmhouse with plank walls and no insulation and old rattly windows. Someone else has been there, right? You can turn that heat up to 80 degrees and you're still cold because of all the radiant heat loss. So how our buildings perform make a big difference in our quality of life. And then for businesses, there's a lot of ways. This is a picture of a composting source, you know, food separation system that we set up in a business. In addition to saving the business money, you can also get rid of waste and inefficiencies and help the business perform better in a whole bunch of different ways. So isn't that nice that something that we care about as far as climate change has all these other great things that can be accomplished by addressing it? So we have got about 100 staff people that work throughout the organization, and some of them are energy auditors, or now we call them energy specialists, because people didn't like the idea of being audited. It sounded like a tax thing or something, so a little marketing there. And business specialists, environmental educators, our eco fellows, which I'll talk about in a minute. But it's really a great group of people here in the Berkshires and in the rest of Western Mass that are very dedicated to trying to make a difference in the environment. We were been around since 1976, and we base our work on science. So the work that we do in people's homes, there's very rigorous standards that we have to adhere to as our knowledge in the field of building science keeps getting better and better. That's the same thing we work in a business. And when we're teaching the public about things, we're very careful to make sure that we're basing whatever we say on science. And I think that's even more relevant today as there are people, especially around climate change, where people are looking at it more on an emotional level or a political level or sort of an identity level. And that's a conversation that we don't really get involved in. We just talk about the science and what you can do. And I think that's served us well over the years. We certainly don't do this work alone. This is just a smattering of different organizations that we work with, from utility companies to government agencies, dozens and dozens of local contractors that do work on our behalf in people's homes or businesses, lots of partnerships with different communities, doing stuff in the schools and helping on green commissions. And there's many more that we could list here. And it's really it's great that there's so many different organizations and folks working on the environment these days. So we actually believe that an individual action matters. So sometimes people will say to us, well, I could recycle this bottle, but what's it going to really do? Or I could screw this light bulb and will it really make a difference? And we would say, yes, it will. And so, and we'll talk about why that is a little bit. Here's one of our people helping someone at a transfer station with something as simple, or should be as simple, as figuring out what goes to recycling and what goes in the trash. Not rocket science, but if we all do it right, and we all do it, it does add up. So why do we think that it matters? Well, one is that they really do it. Anything that you can do that we're helping you do, or that other organizations like us are helping you do, really does help to improve your life. And who doesn't want that, right? That's a good thing. And then the individual actions add up, and we'll show you some of the stats from just the work that we did just by, you know, in this little area here. But if you multiply all the things that are happening across the country and the world, they do make a difference. Is everything we're doing right now enough to say that we don't have to worry about climate change? Well, of course not. It's not even close. But it's more than we were doing before, and we're going to be doing more later, and it does make a difference. And then I think the other thing, which is more and more understood now, although we've always sort of thought it, is that individual people or businesses taking steps to reduce their carbon footprint really does help to create change on a bigger scale. And that's for a couple of reasons. One is that the more people do it and see other people doing it, it helps to create a social norm, and that is just the way our society does things, and that actually, you know, social scientists and behavioral scientists will tell you that that actually does get more people to do it. And leading by example and doing it actually gets a lot more people to do it than trying to scare them or make them feel guilty or some of the other things that we try in our because we're trying so hard to get people to care. The other thing too is that there's been some interesting studies. I don't know if any of you read that column, the upshot in the New York Times on Sunday, but there's something they're calling the Copenhagen effect, which is, you know, they're trying to figure out why are so many people in Copenhagen riding their bicycles. Like 50% of the population ride their bicycles to work. There's no government mandate. There's actually very little incentive to do it. It's harder, but it really is just that it's become the way that society works. Because more and more people ride their bicycles, that makes more people ride their bicycles. And so that's, you know, if we can give people chances to do the right thing and encourage them, it does add up. And again, is that going to solve the whole problem? No, and we have to do things structurally, and that's what other groups work on. So let's just talk a little bit about what we've been focusing on for the last 3 years, or last couple of years. We have a goal, we have our Go Green campaign, we're calling it, and we have a goal over 3 years, and we're about halfway through it now, to help 80,000 people and businesses take some kind of green action and save enough energy equal to taking 40,000 homes off the grid for a year and carbon emission reductions equal to 100,000 cars off the road for a year and $100 million in lifetime savings to the people and businesses that do that. And For a little old nonprofit organization, that's not bad. And there's lots of groups like this across the country doing this. So we are tracking it, and so far we're about halfway through, but we have data through the end of the first year, and we're over a third of the way there, as you can see, for all of the different measures. And the question is, how did we get there? What did we have to do? And that's where the really fun numbers start to go. So I'm just going to show you a couple. But for example, last year, we screwed in almost 100,000 light bulbs. And we actually tried to figure out, like, how many CET employees does it take to screw in a light bulb? And the answer is about 0.1, because we screwed in 100,000 light bulbs. So, but it is... These are the new LED light bulbs, by the way, and if you haven't tried them, I remember one of the first things I did at CET was I was doing workshops about compact fluorescent lights when they first came out, and they were about this big, they weighed about 10 pounds, they came in two pieces, they took about a minute to warm up. Does anyone remember those?
I have them in the basement still.
Yeah.
CET.
You do, yeah. Because we wanted to save energy, and we wanted it so bad, but the performance was, you had to be dedicated like you to use them, right? And they did save a lot of energy, But the new, the LEDs, if you haven't tried them, they're spectacular. They last a very long time. They get great energy savings, great quality of light, and they're just, we're finding that we go into people's homes, they can't get enough of them. We're sometimes screwing in 20, 25 light bulbs because people want them everywhere. And then we went into about 5,000 homes last year. I think this year we'll go into hopefully more about 6,000 or 6,500. And across the state, it's many, many times that, just in Massachusetts. And then across the country, of course, it's many, many times that. And again, it's one house at a time, one light socket at a time kind of work. We helped businesses and others reduce, reuse, or recycle or compost about 24,000 tons of waste. That's a picture of our eco-building bargain store in Springfield, which I'll talk more about in a minute. But that's, you know, a significant amount of waste. And the point of the Go Green campaign is really just to help get people to rally around the fact that the little part that they do that they think may not be significant really does add up. And so it's really a way to try to communicate that message to people. And I think people are starting to get excited about it. So let's talk a little bit about specifically what we do. In greening your home, basically we have a whole bunch of services we can do to help you there. We also have a bunch that we can do in your business. And then we have community partnerships that we do with municipalities and schools and others to help spread the word. So in energy efficiency work in your home, it's really the mass save audit. And we'll talk about that more in a minute. But how many people here have had a mass save audit? Good. So for those of you who have, we'll talk about why that's a great idea. And then we also sell a renewable electricity project called New England Green Start. That's one of our eco fellows dressed like a wind turbine to get people excited about. We go to fairs and festivals and get people to sign up for that. And it's an option for people who can't get solar on their own roof. And then we have our used building materials store, Eco Building Bargains in Springfield. Similar to if anyone's been to the Habitat Restore in Pittsfield here, it's much bigger. It's the largest in New England, and we have many used building material items as well as some new green items. So if you're a home improvement person, a weekend warrior, it's a fun place to shop. And on the business side, we also do a lot of work with energy efficiency, and composting, recycling has been a lot of our work. Some of you may know that organic waste or food waste has been banned from disposal if you're a large generator of that. So if you're a large restaurant or a banquet facility or a food manufacturer or a supermarket, you can no longer throw food waste into the trash. And so we've done a lot of work statewide to help businesses comply with that and have been working on that issue really for decades. So the Big Y's and Stop and Shops and Price Choppers, we've helped them divert that food waste either first to have someone else eat it while it's still edible and healthy, and if not, then to compost it or turn it into energy, biogas and energy, instead of having it thrown away. Oh, and then we also do partnering in the community. And so one of the things I wanted to let people know about is our Eco Fellowship program, especially for any students who are going to be graduating. We have a program that we hire 6 new college graduates for 1 year to be CET Eco Fellows, and we get people from all over the country applying. It's very competitive, but we also get lots of local applicants too. And it's a year of service, kind of like, has anyone ever heard of AmeriCorps, Vista, that kind of thing? It's like that, but it's our own program and includes a lot of training around, we're sort of developing the next generation of environmental leaders and teaching them how we do our work. But also they're the ones that are going out into the world and doing a lot of the community education work that we do, which is so important. And it's a great deal. You get, I can't remember exactly what the stipend is, but it's similar to the AmeriCorps stipend, plus a bonus for staying for the whole time, plus lots of professional development, going to conferences and the like. On the community level, we also do work. I don't know if probably some of you know Nancy Nyland or have worked with her in the past, our associate director. So she sits on the Pittsfield Green Commission here, and also we've done the work with the Planning Commission and other communities. anything from way back when, helping recycling getting started in the Berkshires when the materials recycling facility started, all the way up to working on issues like a ban of plastic bags or that sort of thing. Oh, the other thing I wanted to just briefly mention now, but I'll talk about more later, is that we are also working now at the community level here in North Berkshires to find a way to get community ownership of larger but still community scale solar fields that can be, if you can't get solar on your own home or business for any reason, can you still have ownership and all the benefits of that while getting the solar electricity for your home? So let's talk specifically about what you can do. And there's different lists out there, top 10 lists, and we chose one from the Union of Concerned Scientists. They have a book called Cooler Smarter, which if you haven't read it, it's a very good read for people who are kind of wonky about climate change. But it really goes into what are the most important things that you can do that you should focus on, because we might spend a lot of time deciding if we should take a paper bag or a plastic bag to the grocery store, and that is important, and of course the answer is neither, you should take a reusable bag, but really there's some things that are good to focus on that there's a lot of options out there for you to participate in, so I'm going to go through some of those now. But I encourage you to, if you don't know the Union of Concerned Scientists, they're an excellent organization that really, anytime there's sort of a policy question or a debate about what we should do or not, they really look at the science and boil it down to a scientific answer that they're completely apolitical. It's a great resource. Has anyone ever used the Union of Concerned Scientists before? No, I recommend them. So the first thing, especially when you live in Western Mass, is your car, right? It's probably obvious, but a lot of us drive a lot of miles. Ironically, I work in an environmental organization, but because we have offices in the Berkshires and the Pioneer Valley and Springfield, and I have to go out to Boston and Westboro, I drive a lot. And so the next time that you're going to get a car or upgrade your car, if you can get one that's a much higher mileage one than you had before, you can save a lot of money and have a huge impact on your carbon footprint. Normally other presentations or other top 10 lists would say things like take public transportation, walk and bike to work. And those are all very good things, but they tend to be more relevant to people who live in urban areas and their home, life, school, work, everything is all in one little area. So if you can live like that, that's a super green way to live and your car becomes irrelevant. So that's even better. But for a lot of people, we're going to have a car, and so that's a good thing to focus on. And here's two links. The US EPA has a pretty good guide, and also the ACEEE, American Council for an Energy Efficient Economy, has a good greener cars guide as well. And you can either Google those, or just if you get this presentation, click on those links, and that can help you. Second thing, besides our transportation individual level, is really our home energy use. For those of us who own a home or live in a home or an apartment where we can work with our landlord to do something about it. And really the biggest use of energy, wasted energy, is air leaks. So a lot of us think about insulation, which we should also do at the same time we're fixing this problem. But in reality, most of us have enough air leaks in our house that it's equivalent to just keeping a window open, or in some cases a door wide open all winter long. So if you think about what if you just like went over and like threw your window open and just, all that cold air coming in and all that hot air going out, that's essentially how leaky many of our homes are. And so this is a picture of a blower door, which is an instrument that we use to go in and slightly depressurize a house by having the fan suck air out. And then we can measure how much the difference between the inside and the outside pressures are, and then go around and close up leaks in the attic and in other places around the basement sill and where we know houses leak, and get it to a point where there's a lot less air infiltration. And that can be very, very effective at reducing your energy use and also your energy bill. So The best way to do that is to get the mass save energy audit that we talked about earlier. And I realized, I think last week or the week before, someone was talking about this. There's the information there. I did it at my home, and I couldn't believe the amount of comfort gain that I got, and the lower bill, like probably 25 or 30% lower bill for energy use, and also just much more comfortable. And I was very proud this winter. No ice damming, you know, like they can't always fix ice damming because it depends. There's lots of reasons for ice damming. But when you have a cold roof and a cold attic because you're keeping all the heat in the living space, that's how you want the house to work. Now, if you have cathedral ceilings or skylights or other things, it gets a lot more complicated. But for a basic house, if you can keep that attic cold because all the heat's staying in it, and no air is leaking out that way, and no air is leaking in at the bottom of your house and making your house be like a big chimney, that can be a huge, huge savings for you and for the environment. So I really encourage you to get that. If you have gotten one, I encourage you to tell your friends that you got one and how great it was, so you should get one. They should get one too. The next thing is to use a programmable thermostat. And the reason that I think they say use a programmable thermostat is because there are actually a fair amount of programmable thermostats in people's homes. Unfortunately, a lot of them are not programmed. And so they have the capability of turning the heat up and down, but they're really not, or they're programmed incorrectly. Some of you have probably seen the Nest. Has anyone seen the Nest, the new super fancy iPod version of a thermostat that learns your occupancy and it sort of programs itself? But those are very cool, and there is a rebate for those now too through getting an energy audit. But being able to set back the energy use when you're not at home, or if I know my house has three different zones, and so I can keep the thing moving around based on our lifestyle. And you can have it different during the week. During the weekend, you can pick when your weekend is. So if you have Tuesdays and Wednesdays off, you can do it that way. So they really are, they're getting a lot easier to program, and they really do, without changing anything else about your house, it just instantly for $50 or for free, depending on if you get an energy audit, they can save you a lot of money. So again, same answer there. Get a mass save audit, or you can just buy it yourself and get a rebate, and there's a link to the Energy Star rebates. This one kind of surprises people sometimes, but when you look at the actual numbers, eating less meat does make a difference in your carbon footprint that is greater than a lot of other things you could do besides the one we just mentioned. And that's just because of the resources it takes to, the higher up on the food chain you eat, the more resources it takes. And you're probably going over that in your class at some point that, you know, it's, you know, there's water, there's land, there's feed, there's all the resources to make the feed and so forth. Then there's the actual processing of the meat. So the less meat you eat, the less your carbon footprint in general. And so, you know, our approach to all these different things is, I've been a vegetarian for 20 years, but I would never eat dinner with a preachy vegetarian or worse, a vegan, because it's like, it's no fun because they're telling you how bad you are the whole time, right? So you don't have to stop eating meat completely. You can just eat a little less meat. And so there's things like Meatless Mondays. These are three websites that I really like. One's 10 Ways to Eat Less Meat from Fine Cooking. They give you a whole bunch of recipes. Same one this week for dinner. And then there's something called being a flexitarian instead of a vegetarian. And that just means you sometimes eat meat and sometimes you don't, but you try to eat a little less meat. And that flexitarian approach seems to be catching on and is a little trendy right now. So there's a lot of good resources out there to be a flexitarian. I think the other benefit of being a flexitarian is it's not really about right and wrong. It's just about trying to make a change in behavior over time. And that tends to be more successful when you do things that way. And also, there's lots of great food. And certainly, it's much less unheard of. It's much more popular now than it was before. One thing that some of you may know about are the new kinds of power strips here. This one is called a smart strip, and it has different kinds of sockets, and certain sockets will actually turn something off when you turn something else off that's also plugged into the power strip. So if you have things that go come on and off together, like a computer and a printer, or some of the TV and AV setups, you don't have to turn them all off. You can just turn them off at the power switch, and it will actually cut power to them. And the reason that that's important is that even when we turn off certain things, they're actually still drawing power. And as you get more and more into the ENERGY STAR models of things, they do less of that. But you can think something's off and it's still using quite a bit of power, and these power strips help make sure that it doesn't happen. So they're pretty handy, and there's only a few places in your home that you really plug that much stuff in that would work like that. Again, you can get them for free with some ideas on where you should use them from your MassSave audit, and also there's great information about them on the ENERGY STAR website. And it's a lot easier than like trying to unplug everything and plug it back in, which some people do. Appliances are a big one. Refrigerators and air conditioners have gotten much more efficient. If you've got a really, really old refrigerator, you'd be shocked at how much energy it uses compared to a new one. If it's 20 or 30 years old, it's a lot more. Same with dehumidifiers, all the ENERGY STAR. If you buy anything with the ENERGY STAR label, you're going to get a huge increase in energy efficiency and a huge decrease in your carbon footprint. These are things that are on all the time that we're using, so it's an important thing to consider. And there are plenty of rebates that you can get with or without a MassSave audit to buy those, so you should take advantage of those. There's also lots of nice other features they get. If you have one just a few years old, I wouldn't recommend getting rid of it and getting a new one, but the older it is, the more important it would be to do that whenever you can. These are kind of cool, these kilowatt meters or electricity monitors. You can plug them in between the socket and the thing that you're using and just see how much energy it uses. And it's kind of interesting, geez, what is that hot tub, or waterbed really costing me per month? All kinds of different things that you might be curious about. And it gives you a way to learn more about your own energy use and decide how you want to go about it. The good news is that most libraries in Massachusetts have them for free, that you can just check them out like you would check out a book, and you can use it. So you can just go to that link or just check with your local library. You can also purchase one, and I think they're around $100 or something like that, so they're not inexpensive, but they're not, it's not like buying a new computer or anything. And they're kind of fun to play around with. Eventually, with smart meters and things like that, there'll be more and more of this type of real-time information that's given to you for all kinds of different reasons, but we're not quite there yet. We already talked about light bulbs, so I won't talk more about that, except for to say, if you get your MassSave audit, you can get them, and for free. They'll come and screw them in, and they're awesome. But also, most local stores are selling them now, and the prices have come way down, because the utility companies are paying the rebate ahead of time, basically, so you can just buy them for a couple bucks, and the real cost is hidden because the utilities are incentivizing that. Interestingly, one thing I find lighting fascinating, LED lights are just like, the LED is actually a very little dot, and you put them in all different kinds of ways. In reality, there's no reason that an LED light has to look like a light bulb. I mean, you could make a sheet of lights. You could have it be in your carpet, your wall, your ceiling. It can wrap around things. There's some really innovative lighting designs, but no one buys them. No one even wants to look at them because everyone wants their light bulb. So there's a lot of work put into making an LED light look like a light bulb, even though it doesn't have to. So maybe some year, some down the road, there won't be lamps and things like that anymore, because the lighting will just be integrated into our house in other materials. But that might be a long time from now. That shape has been around for over 100 years, so we're used to it. If you can get an ENERGY STAR washer and dryer, that's awesome. These front loaders, really, by the time they're done spinning your clothes, they're pretty dry, so when you put them in your dryer, you're also saving a lot in your dryer. But even if you don't, just switching over to cold water, simple thing, but it does save a lot of energy because you use a fair amount of water, especially if an old washing machine, then you save even more. And if you want to hang out your clothes to dry instead of putting them in the dryer, then you get way extra bonus points for that, because that does make a big difference. This one's kind of obvious. Just buy less stuff. And we run a retail store, so it's sort of strange that we're trying to buy less stuff. But really, reuse is the way to go from a waste and recycling standpoint for all kinds of reasons. You think of the life cycle of a product, right? You have to extract something from the ground or from the forest or somewhere. You have to manufacture that, refine it. Then you have to make a product. Then you have to, make that into a product that's a whole bunch of those little products put together. Then you have to ship it somewhere, on and on and on. There's so much energy used and so much waste created. Anytime we can just reuse something or not use something, it's really a home run from an environmental perspective. So some resources for you here. Our Eco Building Bargain Store in Springfield, the one in Pittsfield that I mentioned, the ReStore, great places to get reused materials. EPA has a guide to reuse in New England, which has lots of different options. Has anyone been to the Pittsfield Repair Cafe? Go to their Facebook page. This is linked to their Facebook page. One Saturday a month at a church in Pittsfield, like 20 different volunteers come, and they will just fix anything you have that's broken for free. So you have a broken lawnmower, you need something sewn because it has a rip in it. You have a tool that's not working. And it's a really cool idea. They're popping up all over the country. And it's a way not just to get your thing fixed, but to learn how to do it and see what tools you need. And it's a community resiliency thing because, it used to be, I remember my first vacuum cleaner, it broke, and I went to the Sears store, I looked at the pop-out view of the thing, I could pick the order number of the new motor, I could pop it right in, you could fix stuff yourself. And now it's harder and harder to do that. There used to be a guy who would resole my shoes. I still do have a tailor who will fix rips and stuff because I'm not that good at sewing. But that is harder and harder to come by, those kinds of things. And so these repair cafes are people who know how to do it, and they want to teach you how to do it too. I think last time I wasn't there, but there was a guy, there was a teenager there who would help your electronic devices work if you were having trouble programming them or whatever. And so it's a really neat idea. I encourage you to check it out, or maybe even form one up here in North Adams. And then there's all the local thrift shops and repair shops, and of course Craigslist and FreeCycle and lots of other things on the web. But there really is, there's a whole second economy of used and surplus materials, which really has a huge benefit to the environment. And then last but not least, I think spreading the word is a really important thing. So probably most of you here have done one or more of the things that I've mentioned. And if you haven't, I certainly encourage you to do some of them. We can help you. But even if you've done all of them, going out and spreading the word and telling people that you've done it and what the benefit has been and how they help them figure out how they might do it is really an important task for all of us, because in the end, when you do look at any of the social science studies or community-based social marketing or even just straight-up marketing and advertising, word of mouth, which means one person telling another person something, is always by far the most important way that anything happens in the world. So, we have our store, and we do advertising, Facebook advertising and Google ads and TV ads and all these things, and we do surveys at the store. How did you hear about us? And told by a friend or a relative or coworker is still the number one answer. Over half. And that's true for any business or any social movement. It's really person-to-person communication. Now, that might be you posting it on your Facebook page or Instagram, or any, it doesn't have to be that you were all at a party talking about it. But the fact that you're saying, this is something that I did and I think you should do it too, is really a very strong, very powerful force for getting change to happen. Okay, so let's say you've done all that. Has anybody done all those things that I mentioned? You do, you get a gold star. Pretty much? The CFL. Okay, so good. So then there may be a few other things that you haven't done or that we can at least talk about. And if not, then you can certainly, you're good at telling your friends already about it probably, and colleagues. So renewable energy on your roof, that's something that's more and more you're seeing, you know, the solarized mass program you may be familiar with. And there's a lot of good resources there. One, there's something called the Mass Solar Connect program, which is like solarized mass, but you can live in any town. And one of our partners, the Mass Energy Consumer Alliance, is they got a contract with the State Department of Environmental Energy Resources to do this program. And it's really great because you get preferred pricing for a solar PV system on your roof, as well as an approved vendor, and some help figuring out all the details of how to do it. And also, if you do go to the Massachusetts Clean Energy Center, there's all kinds of information on Solarized Mass, which is a program that, have anyone heard of Solarized Mass? A couple of you? Yeah. So it's a great program. Massachusetts, for clean energy work, both renewable energy and energy efficiency work, has been number one in the state for a couple, in the country for a number of years in a row now, partially because of these kinds of programs. People are less familiar with solar thermal, which makes solar usually for hot water use. And so there is a solar thermal program with lots of incentives, and also a loan program. And the loan program works for both solar thermal as well as solar PV. And that's a relatively new program, and I'm very excited about that because you can borrow money against the value of the system that you're installing. So you're borrowing money on the asset that you're creating as opposed to like a second mortgage or a personal loan. And so you're much better off with being able to use the ownership model by borrowing the money yourself as opposed to having someone else own the system and you're buying the energy from it. And here's a couple of ways that you can buy energy that's green if you can't have something on your own roof, and that's really through New England Green Start or other green up programs through your electric company, or I know there's some municipal aggregation going on around here. Is it really 6:15 already? Okay, I'm going slowly. Sorry, Dan. I'm going to have to speed things up a little bit here because I want to make sure we get to carbon pricing. Quickly, I'll just talk about community solar. We're working in Williamstown with it's called the In My Backyard program, and we're working, Nancy Nyland, who you may know, is working with about 10 or 20 families to form an LLC corporation, limited liability corporation, to own the solar that they all share the energy from, because they can't put it on their own roofs. And it's going to be locally owned, locally operated. And we're creating a toolkit that if someone else wanted to be able to do this in their community, we can help you do that. And that toolkit should be out in about a year or so after we finish the project. And there's some other recommendations around community solar that will be in the copy of the presentation. I think I'm going to skip the green home building part. I'll just say that there's lots of different ways to build green homes. You may have heard of LEED homes. There's also something called passive house, net zero energy homes. And so if you're interested in building a new home, we certainly have lots of resources for you that can help you do that. And then there's a lot of benefits to that, much more than retrofitting your home. But there's also environmental cost of building a home from scratch, so you have to look at that carefully. On the business side, we've worked with really businesses all over the state and locally. Lots of benefits there, cost savings and being a leader in the community. One of the things that I like to point out is that if you're a really big business, like a publicly traded corporation, you're all over this for lots of different reasons and actually doing some pretty innovative things, sometimes sort of ahead of the curve of what governments are doing to save energy, because there's just huge benefits financially for them to do so. And also the customers and shareholders are now more and more demanding it. Not to say that every business is green, but the fact that the old dichotomy of sort of I can't make money if I want to be green has really kind of evaporated, especially at the biggest business level. These are some businesses that we've worked with, anywhere from the Adams Ale House to Double Edge Theater, and then to MIT and the Aquarium, that have all done green things right here in Massachusetts. In Berkshire County alone, we've worked with over 300 businesses. And here's some that you might recognize. That's just about 30 of them, about one-tenth of the businesses that have taken green steps here. either energy efficiency, investing in lighting or new pumps or equipment, to starting to compost their food waste or recycle their shrink wrap, all kinds of different things. So it's really exciting to see, because the business, the impact of the business world on the carbon footprint of our community is actually quite large. And so the fact that they're doing a lot of work is also really important. And we can help you do that. And here's some different resources. I just want to quickly mention there's something called Recycling Works Massachusetts, which is a statewide program to help any business set up a recycling program, often for free. We can get the technical assistance done, and you just have to pay the hauler for whatever service you get. And then also the Mass Farm Energy Program, where if you're a farm and you want to do energy efficiency work, the state has resources to help you there too. So a lot of resources in Massachusetts. Last but not least, I just want to briefly talk about putting a price on carbon. It's not something that we work on at CET, but I think in a public education mode, it's good to talk about. Has anybody talked about or thought about a carbon tax or a carbon fee and rebate? Is that familiar to some people, a couple of you? So it's really all the work that we're doing now at CET and a lot of other groups is, you know, governments are setting up incentive programs and utilities and, you know, rebates and so forth. We're doing lots of public education. We're showing people why it's a good idea, convincing them to do it, and there are some benefits. But if you could get a price on emitting carbon into the atmosphere, that would just change the way our economy works, and it would make it much easier for all this stuff to happen, because the incentives would be aligned where they need to be. And there are places. British Columbia is doing this quite successfully right now. There's places in Europe that are doing it. So it's not completely untested. And they haven't all been without their wrinkles, but it's an idea whose time has come. And the ones that I like the best, the proposals that are being floated now, are something called revenue neutral. So it's kind of a hard sell when you say, we would like to make gasoline 40 cents a gallon more expensive, or heating oil, or electricity to go up by a large amount. No one really wants to pay more for energy. And so what's interesting is we tax income, but income is a good thing. Like, who doesn't want more income in reality? So why do we tax income? We can do things like collect money for the fee of having carbon go into the atmosphere, and then just give that back as a rebate check to everybody, or we can use it to form a tax credit. There's all kinds of different ways that we could set up a system where we're taxing the thing that we don't want and giving back money for other things that we're happy to have. And one of the other things I really like about it is that it lets the marketplace find the solution. So whether it's a cap and trade system or a straight price on carbon, instead of the government or any of us trying to figure out what the cheapest and best way to get less energy used is, or less carbon in the atmosphere, it just lets our great entrepreneurial spirit and marketplace figure that out. And it does it usually faster and cheaper than we could if we tried to force a solution on ourselves. The other thing is that there's ways, it is a consumption tax, so in other words, you're using it. If you use more of it, you have to pay more. And if you're at the lower end of the economic scale, you spend more using things like gas as a percentage of your total income than you do if you're at the upper end, so you have to be careful. But there's ways that you can have credits and rebates that make sure that it's not unfair to people at the bottom of the economic scale. And you can also protect businesses that are energy intensive, that we want them to remain competitive in Massachusetts. So I think there's ways, if you build it right, to have it really be successful. What can you do? I think a couple things. One is, so, you know, learn more about putting a price on carbon, and then also just learn about how to talk about it. I think things like, let's make the polluters pay, might sound good at first, but in reality, who are the polluters? Well, I guess it's me, right? Because I buy the energy at the, you know, so you think the polluter is the power plant or the big factory, but we're buying it. And whether or not we think we're guilty or they're guilty, we're still going to pay for it, because they're just going to raise the prices. So I think it's much better to say the cost of carbon is going to be added, emissions are going to be added into our economy, and then that's going to disincentivize more of that happening. At the same time, we're going to give all the money back to people and they can spend it on something better. And